Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you guys hear in back there? Okay. So this morning I want to continue. This is my second talk and my last talk on my last talk until I do this again. That is on pattern-based existence and paying attention to the patterns, to the habits that get in our way of living fully, of enjoying our moments, of appreciating our moments. So I'll spend 5 or 10 minutes talking about what I talked about in my last talk, and then move on from there. So we know pretty well that our small self is usually in the past or the future, and just a little bit in the present. And in the past, projected into the future, it's based on some pattern that we learned. Some fear-based pattern, some anger-based pattern, some lustful-based pattern. And we don't really inhabit our moments. We don't inhabit them. So the first thing to do is to recognize that. Just to recognize that. To see that that's going on. And to acknowledge it. And not to get freaked out in your meditation when it happens, because meditation is partly about seeing those patterns. If we didn't want you to see those patterns, we wouldn't have you sitting facing a wall. We'd have you with a beautiful mandala, so you could get all churned up. I'm not to critique the mandalas, they're great. Or we'd have you with Buddhas in front of you, you know. Gods and beings to help you and to support you, but you're facing a wall. So what are you going to be doing when you're not just watching your breath? You're going to be noticing your patterns. And there's a purpose to that. There's a purpose to that, because only when you begin to recognize your patterns is there a possibility that you will begin to disidentify with them. A possibility. You have to hold out that possibility, or there is no point in doing meditation at all. So I hold out that possibility for you and for myself. So in our meditation, we learn to observe the reaction, observe how it arises, how it operates. And we know that patterns form from things that happened in the past, things that traumatized us in the past, and we're protecting ourselves from those traumas, or from just a series of little negative things where people poked us or did something that wasn't very nice to us. And that pattern protects us. So we know that stuff. And a sign of a pattern is when things aren't going the way they should be going. We've got our expectations. We have our commitment. My commitment to Zazen during practice period. Oh, that's my commitment. But all of a sudden, I don't have time to honor my commitment. Or Halloween intervened, or Thanksgiving intervened, or my child intervened. If that happens a lot, if it happens routinely, some pattern is getting in your way. And so last time I also talked about recognizing patterns and then developing a practice around patterns. And of course, the practice that you get tired of hearing about is, some of you get tired of hearing about, is the practice of sitting in meditation, sitting still on a daily basis and on a regular basis. But I also talked about specific cognitive and behavioral practices, which you can do to a degree. And one of the cognitive practices is you find the pattern and then you imagine yourself resisting the pattern, not giving into the pattern. And you see what comes up for you. What kind of emotions come up, where you experience that in your body. And you then have a chance to discover the underlying mandate, underlying imperative that's that's beneath the surface. There usually is one. And it's a can't, I can't do this, I must do this, I should do this, I shouldn't do this. In psychology, when I was young, we called that superego. But you don't have to know anything about superego. You can just see it. You can just see it. And it's not pleasant. At that point, you want to leave retreat if you're on retreat. Oh, I've done enough of this. I'll get out of here. Or you want to leave. You want noise. You want distraction. You want stimulation. You want to be with your best friend. But this is good. So I'm here to tell you this is good. And be quiet, which is what I always say in retreats. Be quiet, because only if you're quiet is there a chance for you to really see it. And then you can do different behavioral interventions too for whatever the pattern is. And those come out of the Buddhist tradition, all kinds of them. And patterns work most strongly in what? In situations of adversity. And I've been practicing Zazen for a long time, but in situations of adversity, I just revert. I just go back to pre. I started sitting when I was 20. I go back to 10. Situations of adversity, or 8, or 6. So don't be too greedy to get rid of these patterns. You need to first just see they're there. Seeing is the beginning of freeing. And then they tend to come up for some people, but not all people, after retreats. And why would they come up after a retreat? Well, partly because they're starved during the retreats. And then, as soon as the retreat's over, not always, but sometimes. You've starved the patterns, the poor things. You haven't really starved them. You've been paying attention to them, but they want food. They don't just want someone to pay attention to them. And they're used to getting a lot of food, right? A lot of food. So now, okay, so that's what I talked about last time. So this morning I want to talk about the six realms. Some of you know the six realms pretty well. Some of you don't know them. But I'm going to talk a little bit of detail about the six realms. So patterns, and I want to give Ken MacLeod credit for putting this stuff together, I think, in the most coherent fashion. I mean, it's throughout the Indian literature, throughout the Tibetan literature, throughout the Mahayana literature, but Ken MacLeod has really put it together in the most, I think, well-organized fashion. Six categories, six realms, right? How many of you know the six realms? Raise your hand if you know the six realms, if you have familiarity with six realms. Only less than half of you. Oh, wow. Okay, but I'm still going to not do a beginning in the six realms, because you can read about them. You know? So the six realms. The first realm is the hell realm. Each realm, each category of patterns, there's a predominant emotion, right? Predominant emotion. Predominant emotion in the hell realm is anger. Okay. Second realm, hungry ghost realm. Hungry ghost has tiny little throat. Can only get little tiny pieces of rice in and a huge belly, right? That's the realm of emotional neediness. Neediness. I can't get much in. I really need it. Give it to me. Help. I need all of you to tell me after my talk how good my talk is. If one of you doesn't tell me how good my talk was, my poor belly is still empty because I only get little bits in at a time. Oh. Third realm, animal. Animal realm. Animal realm. It's not an emotion, it's instinct, right? It's instinct. falling back on our base instincts, on our base instincts. Fourth realm, human realm. Primary emotion is desire, and primary way of dealing with the desire is through choosing. Ah, intellect, choosing. Through choosing to try to figuring out in the human realm. We're always figuring out how to get what we want and how to get away from what we don't want. We may say we're being spiritual, but that's what we're doing. We're doing that, as human beings do it, spiritual or not spiritual. Fifth realm, fighting spirit realm, jealousy. Trying to get ahead, trying to be the best, trying to achieve at other people's expenses. Sixth realm, God realm, primary emotion, pride. Boy, after my talk, everybody came up and told me how good it was. Woo! I don't have to pay attention to them anymore, because now I've got it. Now I am the teacher. I'm the man. Finally, I'm the man. Right? I'm a Roshi around here. So, here's a fictional example of moving through the realms from my own life. Maybe it will be nonfiction sometime. I hope not. It's a fictional example. So I have a boss at my other place that I work. Here I have no bosses. Here are all, everybody's my boss. I have a boss at other place I work. And I worked hard at the legislature. That's one of my jobs, to get funding for people who are homeless. And I got it this last year. But let's say that then this person, whom I'll call, well, I can call her by real name because it didn't happen, Nancy. Nancy, she just didn't pay any attention to what I did, didn't recognize it. And I really busted my butt at the legislature. It's not easy. I won't get into that, but not easy. Getting up dressed up is not bad. It only took me 20 years to learn how to get dressed up. But there are lots of other parts to it. They're not easy. So let's say she doesn't recognize me. And I'm angry. I'm in an angry state of mind about it. But there's nothing I can do. She's my boss, and she doesn't, I want my job. I like what I'm doing. So then I move into maybe an animal realm. I've been there at the board meeting with her. She hasn't said a thing about what I've done. She's my boss. I come home and look for the chocolate chip cookies. I know exactly where my wife hides the chocolate chip cookies. I know. She changes. She changes around, but I know where to find them. And when she goes out of town, boy, she's out of town right now. Then they're gone. When she goes back. Animal realm, right? So I'm in the animal realm. I don't have to worry about my anger. Chocolate chip cookies, whatever. After the chocolate chip cookies, maybe just some honey. We don't have any sugar in the house. But honey with peanut butter. Maybe some of you don't know about this animal realm stuff, but most of you do. Most of you. Or some other kind of, maybe something to do with sex or drugs or alcohol. I don't know. So then, you can only eat so many chocolate chips cookies before you get a little sick, right? Well, the animal realm holds up for a while, but not too long. Then, back to maybe, I had my chocolate chips cookies, I got a stomach ache, but I have to go back to work tomorrow and see these people again the next day. And I feel hungry ghostish. It's like, she didn't recognize me. Nobody is going to recognize me. Nobody paid attention to all this work I did. The whole board sat around. Nobody said anything. And I was just wanting a little support, just a little bit of support. So I come back to work as a complete hungry ghost. I'm looking for my staff to tell me I'm okay, that I did a good job. I'm looking for someone, at least my wife, to say something. So I tell my wife all about what I've done in hopes that she's going to fill me up. So she says something good, but I only get a little piece of rice down. It doesn't fill me up. And I get my favorite staff to say something good, but that still only gets another 2 pieces of rice in my huge belly. Ah, hungry ghost. So hungry ghost doesn't work. It works for a while, but I don't ever get filled up. So then, maybe I move to the human realm. In the human realm, I'm pretty smart. My mother told me I had a high IQ. I'm pretty smart. Even if your mother didn't tell you you had a high IQ, you're pretty smart because you're human beings. You know how to figure things out, right? You know how to figure things out. So, how am I going to deal with this woman, Nancy? Oh, her son is in one of our programs, one of the programs of my agency. Oh, I'm going to start being really nice to her son and telling her all the things that her son is doing. Her son, who is deaf, but that's okay. Even though he's deaf, I can work with an interpreter. And I, this is all fabrication, but what's fabrication? I mean, no, it's probably not fabrication. The fact that I thought about it all means that it's real. at some level, it's real. I wouldn't have thought about it all if it weren't real. So I do that, and then what happens? I say to Nancy, oh, gee, Donald, you should have seen him yesterday. He was so sweet, and he didn't lose it when someone attacked him verbally. He just stayed calm, and we've got this new program for him. And then Nancy starts paying attention to me. Ah, so in the human realm, I get it. My smartness has got me someplace. So I hang out in the human realm as long as possible, trying to use my intelligence, my figuring out ability, to just stay even. But sooner or later, my figuring out ability doesn't work. It doesn't work. Or I get exhausted with it. And then I need to try something else. So maybe then I go to the fighting spirit realm. The fighting spirit realm, well, that worked for a while, that being nice to Nancy and telling her about how good Dan had done, but after a while she seemed to get tired of it. I said, oh, come on, you know, you don't even know him very well. Then I got it. What strategies left? Then the fighting spirit strategies left. Ah, so I noticed that Nancy is paying attention to my key staff, my director of finance, my directors of operations, my key staff. In the fighting spirit realm, what do? I cut them off. I tell them, don't come to those meetings with Nancy anymore. You guys have, and I say to myself, I'm going to start taking credit for what they did. I'm the boss around here. Enough of this, them taking credit for this stuff. I'm the one who struggles. I'm the one who, the buck stops with me, right? I get the long dollar. That's what they used to tell me. Not very long in nonprofits, but longer than nothing. Okay, so fighting spirit. Jack, don't come to these meetings anymore. I don't tell him what's going on. I said, don't come. Because I notice that Nancy is liking him. So my fighting spirit, she only sees me. She only deals with me. And then I'm going to keep bringing up Danny. So I guess that works for a while. Maybe it really works. Everybody begins to think that I've done all this stuff when actually it's my staff. And then I'm in the God realm. Oh, boy. Now I'm proud. The board is finally thinking, I am the man. Wow. So then I need to struggle to maintain that. And the more I struggle to maintain that, the more likely I'm going to fall right down into the hell room. Because I can only maintain it for so long. Because the principle of everything changes that we talk about a little bit in Buddhism sometimes. Because of that principle, I can only hold it together for so long, and then, whoosh, ah, back in the hell. So, in this practice, determine the realm. A pattern comes up, whatever the pattern is, determine the realm, and then notice what you're trying to strive for in the realm. In the hell realm, you're trying to strive to oppose the person that's making you angry, right? To oppose them. in the hungry ghost realm, you're striving to take in, get nurturance, get support, get love, get recognition. In the animal realm, you're striving to get your physical needs met, your comfort, your bodily needs met, to be comfortable. In the fourth realm, in the human realm, you're striving to get what you want in life. In the fifth realm, in the fighting spirit realm, you're striving to be the best. To be the most enlightened, the most calm, have the best zazen, have your raksu on the best, or do something else. And in the God realm, you're just striving to maintain what you got. So, that's what we're doing in these realms, and we can notice it. And one of the things we notice when we're in these realms, that sometimes within the realms, the strategy in the realm doesn't work, so we do the opposite. So, if my anger doesn't work in the hell realm, anger toward Nancy, then I just might try to do the opposite, which is to just give up. I give up. My anger doesn't work. She's the boss. I just give up. And then when I give up, I'm really deflated. And of course, in what happens in the hell realm when I'm deflated is that my anger turns into hate. Because we move from the hot house to the cold house. My anger turns into hate. My heart freezes. At least with hate, there's some control. Because of anger, there's not any control. At least things are calm. I mean, they're not calm in a way you'd like, in openness, but because the heart's frozen, completely frozen. And then in the second realm, in the hungry ghost realm, we deny our neediness. We deny that we need all this support, all this love, all this recognition. We deny it. And as when we deny it, it gnaws into us, that because we're not acknowledging it, it gnaws at us. It gnaws almost to our very core. And in the animal realm, well, you know, we try to control it, right? We try to control those urges, right? We try to control that yearning for chocolate, sex, drugs, alcohol. We can do it for a while. And then what happens? Situation of adversity. Real difficulty, real adversity. We just blow it. Human realm. What do? Well, we try to use choosing to work toward our desires. Try to figure things out. But if that doesn't work, what do as human beings? We get busy. Human beings are very good at getting busy. If we just get busy, then we don't have to. Then we don't have to deal with this stuff. Busy, busy, busy. This thing, that thing, the other thing. How many of you have enough time even to be here this morning? Shouldn't you be doing something else? This is your one free day a week, and you're here. My goodness, shouldn't you be going to a yoga class at least, or home cleaning at least? How much time do you have? You don't have enough time. Busy, 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 busy. Right? Busy, busy. Then the fighting spirit realm. Well, fighting spirit realm doesn't work. Can't beat everybody out. Trying to, but you can't do it. What do you do? Well, I know what we did in the in the counterculture is that we just said, we're not having anything to do with that competitiveness. That father of mine is a you-know-what. Those people are all you-know-whats. Trying to get ahead, trying to boss people around, trying to make money, trying to get da-da-da. We won't have anything to do with that. We'll just develop our counterculture. We'll do communal things and share and hang out together and love everyone. I was part of that, you guys. What happened to us? How many of those communes stayed? How many of them are still in existence? Can you find any in the United States that are still in existence? Because we really didn't deal with that realm. We really didn't. We were still in that realm. We were fighting over the dome, over how big the dome should be, and whether my design or Bill's design for the dome was the real design out of the whole Earth catalog. Which one was the real one? call Stuart Brand up and ask him. Stuart, what do you think? Oh, we were great. We did a lot to contribute to the world, didn't we? And the last realm, the God realm, there's no opposite you have to go to, because you're just satiating yourself with your pride. So it works until it doesn't work. So there's no opposite. So let's go back to what I was talking about in the beginning about pattern recognition and look at how pattern recognition relates to the realms. So in my talk last time, I talked about three different types of patterns, but today I'll just talk about, just bring up conflict avoidance. Conflict avoidance, that's a pattern. I notice that I'm conflict avoidant. But that could happen in any realm. And the way to discover what realm it's in is to discover what the underlying imperative is, what the underlying mandate is. If you can discover, and you can, just by paying bare attention, just by doing meditation with bare attention, and you could see what realm it's in. And that helps. That helps. So, let's say I'm a conflict avoidant. And I'm not, actually. My problem is the other way. But that's why I'm talking about conflict avoidant, because I don't want to talk about myself. Although, actually, I do talk about myself a lot, but in this case, I don't want to. Because I just want you guys to obey me. So, let's say I'm conflict avoidant. I see the conflict avoidant coming up during a retreat. That's when you really see it. Somebody does something, somebody's sitting next to you making bad noises while you're trying to sit. What should you do? Should you say something? Should you not say something? Well, you're trying to be a good meditator. You're not going to say anything. You're going to be conflict avoidant, right? Not to disturb the retreat. So what's going on with you? Well, and then maybe you imagine yourself just being in conflict with that person, just saying something, saying it out loud. And that helps you discover the mandate. And maybe the mandate is, I must try to impress others in this retreat. I must try to impress others. I must be looked up to in this retreat. Try to impress others. What realm is that? It's the God realm. I must. I'm the man. I must. So I'm going to avoid the conflict. I'm going to avoid mentioning anything. Or what if you say to yourself, but if you notice that the reason you're not saying something to the person during break, that they're breathing too hard, the reason you're not saying it is that you feel one down in this retreat. Everybody else seems to know what to do in this retreat except you. You feel like you can't argue in this retreat. You shouldn't bring something up, or you'll never have any for friends. Nobody will ever like you in this Sangha. You just want a few friends in the Sangha, a few people who like you. And Tim won't respect you because Tim wants you to really just be in the now. But this awful breathing. Tim probably would say, well, be in the now with the awful breathing. But you're so needy, so you don't do anything. What room are you in? Hungry ghost room, right? Or maybe you notice your anger really flaring up at the person sitting next to you. Really flaring up. And if you notice it really flaring up, then you're in what?
Hell.
Hell room. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do anything about it, what happens? Cold hell. You start hating that person next to you. After all, you've committed to sitting next to that person for a week. Can you imagine we do that here at Zen Center? You people have just come in today. We do that. You sit to someone next to someone for a week and don't say anything. They don't say anything to you. We do that because it's only when you retreat from the busyness of your daily life do you have a chance just to be here, just to recognize your patterns. If you don't recognize them, you will never disidentify with them. Recognition is a beginning. If there's no criticism of disidentification, it just happens. It just happens. So there's the possibility that you can both disengage from your reactive pattern and the realm you're in. Disengage from it and disengage. When you disengage from that, you disengage from the striving within that realm. Both the emotion and the striving. That's the possibility that you need to hold out for yourself if you're going to do Buddhist practice. You shouldn't do Buddhist practice if you can't at least hold that possibility out for yourself. Go do something else. I hold that possibility out for you. I really do. I really do. And I've seen it happen. I see it happen time and time again with you, with ones of you, when you're serious about doing this. So this is a question of seeing the web that we're caught in. We're caught in this big web. This is not the web of interdependence. This is a different web. This is a web of our fabrications and our habits and our desires and our plans. And our jealousies and our confusion. That web is so thick and so kind of all-encompassing that we miss the web of interdependence, which is the real web. We miss it. So first we have to begin to just take apart the web of all this habit pattern stuff. And we take it apart by not doing something about it, generally, but more by just seeing it. R.D. Lang says, the range of what we think and do is limited by what we fail to notice. Pretty simple, huh? Pretty simple. So now I want to finish by talking about three pitfalls in this pattern-based attentiveness and practice. And the first is the pitfall of saying, it's all empty. It's all empty. This is a great Zen pitfall. Zen gets criticized by other sects of Buddhism for this pitfall. Oh, it's all empty. That conflict avoidance, that anger, it's all empty. Well, that's a rationalization. That's a cop-out. That's not what we mean by emptiness. That's just just a new web that you're creating. And if you say that to yourself, it's all empty. If you're angry at the person next to you during retreat, you say, oh, it's all empty. And you don't do anything about it. You don't bring it into your consciousness at all. it's going to run amok. It's going to then affect your feeling about the whole retreat. Your feeling about even me, probably. Even, can you imagine that? It's going to. Because it'll spill out. It'll run amok. Unless you somatize it. That's the other thing you can do. Somatize it, right? Everybody knows what somatize is. You don't know what somatize means? Take it into your body. It comes out as disease, dis-ease, lack of ease. Somatize. A lot of studies, especially on Japanese, in Japanese men, on somatizing. I won't go into the details. Japanese Zen practitioners, somatizing. Do you know what I mean, Bonnie? So, not to pick on the Japanese, I mean, Americans. Well, Italians don't somatize at all. What?
The Finns.
Oh, the Finns do. Yeah, yeah, right. I have no Italian in my genetic makeup, but my daughter. We always say that my daughter, she probably picked up some Italian someplace. A lot of Italian, because the rest of us just look at her. She's she got us into counseling when she was six, you know. The rest of us were all, okay, we'll go into counseling. Whatever you want, Aaron. And we get in there, we actually have to talk about our feelings. But Schultz talks about her feelings. So, okay. Right, we have some feelings in here. Anglo-Saxon feelings, someplace under there. So, we say it's empty. Or, better yet, be proactive. Try to make it empty. That's the second pitfall. Try to make it empty. This is just conflict avoidance. I'm here in this retreat. I'm just going to go back in my breathing and make it empty. Make it empty. But you can't make it empty. You have to experience it fully. If you experience it fully, then you'll see it's already empty. It's already empty. What do we say in the Heart Sutra? Form is emptiness.
Emptiness is form.
Emptiness is form. Can't make it empty. It's empty. But only when you experience it in its fullness will you know it's emptiness. Right? Right? And then finally, we say to ourselves, well, here's a poem by Rumi. The idea that the soul will join with the ecstatic just because the body is rotten, that is all fantasy. What is found now is found then. What is found now is found then. So the third pitfall is to think, later on, when I'm not so busy, later on when my son grows up a little bit, later on after the holiday season, when there's so much stress and so much commitment, then I'll do zazen. Then I'll do retreat, later on. Later on when my career is a little bit more stabilized, then I'll really look at this stuff. Later on, right? We're later on people, aren't we? We later on most of our lives, don't we? Yeah, we do. We do. Well, that's the third pitfall. Because really, only what happens now happens later. Only what happens now happens later. Not some big thing you have to think a lot about. But it's true, isn't it? Okay, I think that's all I want to say this morning, but I'll be glad to entertain questions or comments or concerns. Phil.
What you just have been describing, could you use the word examination to describe it, using the realms?
Yeah, we could say examination. I didn't use that word, but that's okay. The problem with that word is that you start thinking a lot I mean, when I think of examination, I think of thinking a lot.
That's what I used to.
Oh, I see.
The question is a tricky one in sin. Is that, okay, you've talked about this as a system.
Uh-huh.
So, and that's what we do on a cushion.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's hard for me to hear your description and not find the word examination. It's like, that's the work, or that, there's a word you used before, and they're the words that you frequently hear about doing, say, the work in Zanzibar.
Mm-hmm. But you know, I prefer.
How does this.
Okay.
So, how. That's the impression that I think, that I know that I get, and I think it's common.
Mm-hmm.
And so, how do we reconcile that with the practice of non thinking?
Well, let's talk about this. So Milarepa says, let rise what arises. Take care not to follow. Let rise what arises. Take care not to follow. That's really what this teaching is about. I think it's important not to be too analytic while you're doing this. I think what you're saying is that when you start getting analytic, just a little bit analytic, like noticing what realm I'm in, that then you're off to the races. Is that what you're saying, or am I?
Well, it's more the message, not from you right now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's a trouble spot that I've always had with Buddhism.
Uh-huh.
And it's or Zen, and it's that spot that's in between thinking, analyzing, examination, looking, finding these patterns, experiencing, and then trying to understand.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you get this maybe a Western thing. It's mixed between almost a psychoanalytic attitude.
That's right.
To like I want to do this work, right? I want to be liberated.
Yeah. That's right. Right.
And non-thinking. So non-thinking is often you're just sitting there
right.
trying to experience.
Right.
And from the experience,
right.
you're really counting on
right.
something happening. So there's a confusion. It's like, are you doing the work or...
Uh-huh. Well, just sitting and watching your breathing is fine, too.
Mm-hmm.
And many teachers, many Zen teachers in particular, will not get into this stuff. Will just say... Just sit and watch your breathing. Just sit and think non-thinking. That's fine, too. So I don't think this is either or. But if you're in a retreat, it's inevitable that patterns are going to start arising. And the bare attention to those patterns, I think, is very important myself as a Zen teacher. Not just forcing those patterns out. If something comes back three or four times, then it needs to be dealt with, but not examined. I mean, again, this is just I'm using a connotation of term, not examined like Socrates, but rather bare attention. You know, that's the word I use over and over again. I don't use mindfulness because mindfulness also to me involves thinking. I use bare attention. Bare. And what's the line between bare attention and examining? I can't tell you.
You understand this sort of, like it's a funny little spot,
yep.
I think,
yep.
of that sort of,
yep.
and I think it may be a cultural thing
yeah.
or something, but...
Yeah, I get it. I completely get it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Could you guys hear him?
Yes.
Could you hear our conversation? Okay.
Last time you spoke, you said too, you did it sort of at the end of the meditation, maybe the beginning, not the middle.
Yeah, that's what I've done over the years. See, I didn't get trained in doing it this way. I got trained in doing it the thinking, non-thinking way. But then, as I said last time, I went to Naropa many years ago, And I got exposed to this stuff, and I thought, geez, Katagiri Roshi, Zuki Roshi didn't teach me this, but I have these habits myself, these patterns that are coming up. This is something I should learn and do. So I began doing it at the beginning of my Zazen or at the end of my Zazen. And then on retreats, I had to do it more often. I just had to. So that was my own history. Yeah. Anybody else? Anything else this morning? Well, we have a retreat coming up soon, you guys. Hey. Hey. Maybe you should wait till after the holidays. We'll have lots of retreats after the holidays. And then it'll be winter. And then maybe you should wait till after spring when it's summer. That's when you're going to have lots of time on your hands. Because you won't have so much pressure. But we do the retreats inside. So maybe you should wait till next fall. Excuse me. Excuse me. Thank you.